Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
It is a great honor and pleasure and privilege to be in your midst, sitting at the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are all more or less conditioned souls struggling in the material world. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Mame Vansa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, that the living entities are my parts and parcels eternally. But they are struggling in the material world, conditioned by the three modes of nature. So our predicament is that we are spiritual beings. We are meant to be in the spiritual atmosphere, but somehow we have come into the material atmosphere, and it is an incompatible situation. So those of you who have come to the Association of Devotees have heard the message of Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, have gotten some sense or idea that you are spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna, and you are meant to serve Him. You are by nature eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, but you've come into this body, which is temporary, full of ignorance and misery. So how do we get out of this predicament? Of course, the general answer is Bhakti Yoga. Lord Chaitanya explains that the Vedic scriptures describe three subjects: Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Sambandha means knowledge of relationships, basically, who am I, who is God, what is the material nature, what is the spiritual nature, and what is my relationship with them, what are their relationships with each other. And the essence of the answer is Jive Swarupai Krishna Nityadas. I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. And Abhideya means the process or the means to attain the goal, and that is Bhakti Yoga. And the goal is Krishna, Krishna Prema, pure love for Krishna. And the serious practice of Bhakti Yoga begins by accepting a spiritual master, taking instruction from him, taking initiation from him, inquiring of him. These are the basic steps that one must take. And then, of all the items of devotional service, 9 items, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the most important. Of course, in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya. We are receiving the knowledge of Krishna through took succession through him, and he has presented to us the teachings of Krishna and the previous acharyas in the line, and he had great faith, full faith in the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his spiritual Prabhupada's own spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and in the holy name of Krishna, the chanting of the holy name. And just as Krishna has all good qualities, so the living entity, being part and parcel of Krishna, also has the same qualities as Krishna, but in minute quantity. But actually, janmadayasyatah, Krishna is the origin of everything. So everything that exists in us must also exist in Krishna. So what we might consider to be bad qualities also exist in Krishna. But of course in Krishna, Krishna is absolute, he's all good. The same qualities exist in the pure devotee. But it can be confusing. Who is a pure devotee? What is the behavior of a pure devotee? Because we have so many material conceptions, which are varieties of the, you could say, impersonal misconception. The impersonalists have the idea that, as individuals, as conditioned souls, as individuals, we've suffered. So the way to become free from suffering is to give up our individual identity, our individual existence. We've had desires, and the desires have brought us misery, so we have to give up desire. And their ultimate goal is to merge into Brahman, the impersonal effulgence that comes from the transcendental body of Krishna. Or the Buddhists is more to enter the void or enter into a marginal position, which is not really spiritual or material, but just sort of in between. And we're all affected by this impersonalism. Srila Prabhupada is glorified by the pranam mantra, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshatarine, that he's delivering the Western countries, which are filled with impersonalism and voidism. And the materialistic scientists, I mean, they also, in their own way, are impersonal. They don't accept a personal basis of existence. And so we're influenced by these ideas. And therefore, we're actually afraid. I mean, that's one of the obstacles in spiritual life. We're afraid of remaining persons, remaining individuals. As Srila Prabhupada says, that you're a person and you're diseased, so your activities cause you pain. But the solution is not to commit suicide. Of course, it happens sometimes. The pain is so intense you think, let me just die. But ordinarily, no one wants to die. So the solution is not to commit suicide. The solution is to cure the disease. So when you're diseased, you're a person. And when you're cured, you're a person. But when you're diseased, all your activities cause you pain. And when you're healthy, the same activities are pleasurable. So, thinking, feeling, desiring, acting, these cause pain in the material world, or result in pain. But the same activities, when engaged in the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness, produce pleasure, eternal pleasure. But it's not that anything is absent. You know, all the sentiments of a conditioned soul also exist in the liberated soul. But in the liberated soul, they're all pure. They're all for Krishna. This morning, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu spoke on a very nice verse with a very good purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 10. Dhruva Maharaj fights with the Yakshas. Text 4, translation. When Dhruva Maharaj heard of the killing of his brother Uttama by the Yakshas in the Himalaya mountains, being overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, he got on his chariot and went out for victory over the city of the Yakshas, Alakapuri. And Srila Prabhupada's purport, Dhruva Maharaj is becoming angry, overwhelmed with grief, and envious of the enemies, was not incompatible with his position as a great devotee. It is a misunderstanding that a devotee should not be angry, envious, or overwhelmed by lamentation. I had opportunity both to hear Srila Prabhupada speak on this topic and to see him as a pure devotee, demonstrate transcendental anger. Transcendental lamentation. As far as the principle, after the first Delhi Pandal held at Connaught Place in 1971, after the Pandal, Srila Prabhupada was staying at a house in New Delhi, and a young man from perhaps America came to meet Srila Prabhupada, and he was so inspired by the Hare Krishna festival that we had had at Connaught Place. He said to Srila Prabhupada that if Krishna consciousness spreads, people will learn to love each other and give up hatred and anger. And Srila Prabhupada replied, "Anger? Did someone tell you that anger is bad? Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita just to make Arjuna angry. He wanted Arjuna to fight and kill the enemies. You can't kill someone unless you're angry. So Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita just to make Arjuna angry." And then he explained that anything can be used in the service of the Lord, including anger. Another example is Hanuman. When Hanuman went to Lanka to find Sita, and he was captured and his tail was set on fire, he demonstrated his transcendental anger and practically burned the whole capital of Ravana to ashes. But Hanuman is the greatest devotee of Lord Ram. Arjuna is a great devotee of Krishna. They use their anger in Krishna's service. There's one occasion in particular when Srila Prabhupada demonstrated his transcendental anger took place on a morning walk in Juhu Beach. Srila Prabhupada had a companion who often accompanied him on his morning walks, Dr. C.P. Patel. Dr. Patel was a little proud. He had gone to England to study medicine, and in those days when he went, it was quite a big thing to go to England to study. But he never compromised his principles of behavior. He never ate meat, he never drank liquor or smoked cigarettes. He never engaged in illicit sex. So he was proud. He had gone to England, and on top of it, he had maintained his principles of conduct. And he knew Sanskrit. He knew many verses. He was quite an intelligent person and a sort of stupid way. But he would talk with Prabhupada, you know. They would have very interesting discussions. So on one morning walk, you know, Dr. Patel, he would bring up different popular religious figures of India. So on one morning walk, he brought up one of them. And Srila Prabhupada basically said, if he quoted a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Namam Duskritina Mudha Prapadyante Naradama Maya Aparita Jnana Asurim Bhava Mashrita. That anyone who is not surrendered to Krishna is a Duskritina, a miscreant. And within the broad category of Duskritina, there are four subcategories. Mudha, fool, rascal, or sometimes it's expressed as ass.
Jerk.
Huh?
Jerk.
Naradama, the lowest of mankind. Maya Aparita Jnana, someone whose knowledge is taken away by Maya. And Asurim Bhava Mashrita, someone who partakes of the atheistic nature of demons. So Srila Prabhupada was saying that this revered holy man of India, who was not surrendered to Krishna, was a Duskritina in one of these categories. And Dr. Patel felt highly offended that Srila Prabhupada was talking about this revered figure in such terms. Srila Prabhupada replied, guess what Srila Prabhupada replied? I know you can answer. Can anyone guess? Yes. Prabhupada said, I'm not saying, Krishna is saying. I'm just repeating what Krishna says. But Dr. Patel was not pacified. He was just incensed. He was just furious. And Prabhupada held his ground. He said, this is what Krishna says. I cannot change it. I'm just presenting what Krishna says. This is our standard. This is our criterion. I can't help it. I'm just repeating what Krishna says. So the argument escalated. I mean, I'm presenting it in a more even tone of voice. But in reality, Dr. Patel started to shout at Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was shouting back at him. And Dr. Patel, he was like getting red in the face. And Dr. Patel had his group of friends, his cronies, who would walk with him. And, you know, maybe because he was like a little intelligent, educated, and outspoken. So he was sort of the leader, and they would just sort of follow him. But in this case, they actually tried to separate him from Srila Prabhupada. It was like sometimes in a boxing ring.
Like
yeah. Like, you know, the two opponents are smashing each other, the bell is rung, it's like the round is over, and then the referee tries to separate them. So his friends, they were literally, you know,
him back,
trying to pull him away, and they said, Swamiji has a heart condition. It's not good for him to get so excited, and he kept shouting, and Prabhupada was shouting, and finally they pulled him away. So, now this was a big mystery. Why Srila Prabhupada engaged with Dr. Patel? Because it was hard to figure him out, actually.
Patel or Prabhupada?
Well, both, but I meant Patel. It was hard to figure him out because he would speak like a Mayavadi, but whenever Prabhupada would accuse him of being a Mayavadi, he would say, "No, sir, I beg to differ. I'm a Vaishnav, a pure Vaishnav," meaning, you know, he doesn't eat onions and garlic or, you know. So, after this incident, Tamal Krishna Goswami went into Srila Prabhupada's room in Juhu. And he said, "You know, why do you put up with him? You know, he's like so offensive. Why do you put up with him?" And Srila Prabhupada replied simply, "Our duty is to engage everyone." And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, "But what is his actual position? It's like sometimes he speaks like a Mayavadi, sometimes he speaks like a Vaishnav, you know, sometimes he's very respectful towards you, sometimes he's very aggressive towards you." And Srila Prabhupada told a story. Now, there was once a man who was very expert in many languages. In whatever language you addressed him, he would reply in the same language perfectly, without any hesitation. So nobody could figure out where he was from. Nobody could figure out what his mother tongue was. And it became quite a topic in the town. You know, who is this person? Where is he from? You know, no one could figure it out. And finally one man said, I will find out. So one day the man snuck up behind the person who spoke many languages and from behind gave him a big whack. And that man started to curse in his native tongue. So Srila Prabhupada said that Dr. Patel, there are others like that. Some of the Swamis even, I met them. They're like expert linguists. There's one, anyway, I don't want to get into it, but you know, if they think you're a Krishna Bhakta, they'll talk about Krishna. They think you're a Shiva Bhakta, they'll talk about, you know, they're just expert in speaking different languages. So, Srila Prabhupada said, Dr. Patel was like that. He could speak many different languages. It was hard to know. But when I gave him a whack, where it really hurt, you know, his real language came out. So then, for the first time in all those years, Dr. Patel didn't join Prabhupada for his morning walk. And Prabhupada also said, now no more discussion. We'll just read the Krishna book. So we would read the Krishna book on the morning walk. But after a couple of days, and Prabhupada would walk early morning, it would be dark when he would start his walk, and then it would come to, you know, the dawning twilight. So it's sort of dark, there's a little twilight, and Dr. Patel would be walking with his friends on one end of the beach and Prabhupada would be walking with his disciples on the other end. And Dr. Patel, it's like he was walking like quite a distance from Prabhupada, like pretending he didn't see Prabhupada and the devotees. And then something happened. He just changed directions and he came to Prabhupada and sort of bowed down and touched his feet. And, you know, he said, you know, Prabhupada, from my childhood, I've been taught to respect all the saints of India. And Srila Prabhupada replied, and our business is to say who is not a saint. Now this is actually a very profound point. I mean, part was anger, but Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we just completed two japa retreats in Montgomery, Texas. Some of you were there. Gaurachandra Prabhu and his wife, Kalpana. Guru Bhakti Mataji was kind enough to send her parents. Yes, Kuvera. So anyway, in Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses the 10 offenses against the holy name, because to get the real benefit of chanting, one must chant without offense. And one of the first offense is sadhu ninda, to blaspheme devotees or sadhus. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses who is a sadhu, because in order to avoid sadhu ninda, one has to know who is a sadhu. And he discusses, there's like 26 qualities of the devotee, but out of those, one essential quality defines a sadhu, and that is Krishnaika Sharana. It's exclusively surrendered to Krishna, or has taken exclusive shelter of the holy name of Krishna. And the other 25, you know, may or may not be present to different degrees, but their absence does not disqualify a person as a sadhu if he has the one qualification of Krishnaika Sharana. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions three categories of asadhus, people who are not actually sadhus, but whom we might think are sadhus. One is, I guess, Mayavadi, impersonalist. And there's the Dharma Dvaji. He like holds the flag of Dharma, like he presents himself as being very religious. But actually, he's not. He's basically a pretender. And I'm remembering the third category just now. But they're not sadhus. Although people might take them as sadhus. And to criticize them is not sadhu ninda. It's not a fault. And if someone criticizes someone who's not a sadhu, and if some third person thinks that the devotee who's criticizing the asadhu is committing an offense, that's an offense. You understand? So it's like Prabhupada did that. Like he said, our business is to point out who's not a saint. And if you think, oh, Prabhupada's being offensive to these saints, that's offensive. But in the case of Dr. Patel, they had a special relationship we can't understand. And according to Dr. Patel, Srila Prabhupada told him that in their past lives they were brothers. I guess brothers sometimes. And if they have that other side to their relationship. I mean, of course, Prabhupada would sit a little higher on his asana at his desk. Dr. Patel would sit across from him. And Prabhupada would speak in Bengali, but Dr. Patel was intelligent enough to understand what he was saying. And then he would reply in Gujarati. And Prabhupada was intelligent enough to understand what he was saying, and he would respond in Bengali. So they had these, they used to have fun together in their own way. So that was anger. Now lamentation, this was a very interesting discussion. A publisher of a weekly newspaper in Mauritius, Mr. Ram Lalla, although he's a Hindu, no doubt, somehow he, in his youth, he'd gone to Russia, he got a little influenced by communism, I don't know. But anyway, he came to meet Srila Prabhupada. And he raised the question that if someone receives knowledge and then acts contrary to the knowledge, is it not ridiculous? And Srila Prabhupada replied, if someone has knowledge, he cannot act in a contrary way. And Ram Lalla was insisting, and Prabhupada was insisting. The thing is that Mr. Ram Lalla had an offensive edge to him. He hadn't really come out with what was on his mind fully. But Prabhupada could understand that he was being offensive. So Mr. Ram Lalla was saying, you know, if someone receives knowledge and acts in a contrary way, is it ridiculous? And Prabhupada was saying, he can't do it. Your question is ridiculous. So then Mr. Ram Lalla brought out Arjuna, that Arjuna had heard the Bhagavad Gita from Krishna. In his own words, he had told Krishna that he had understood the Bhagavad Gita. But then, when he received the news that his five sleeping sons had been murdered, he was overwhelmed with grief, and he said that he would, he was ready to enter fire, give up his life in the fire. So, isn't that ridiculous? And Srila Prabhupada said, mean Arjuna. And then Prabhupada said that everyone knows theoretically Nahanyate Hanyamane Sarire. That when the body dies, the soul does not die. But still, when we hear that a loved one has died, we feel grief. He said that's natural. Everyone feels. But Krishna, the same point, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna to convince him to fight. And even though Arjuna was temporarily disturbed by grief, he did not leave the battlefield. He did not give up his duty. And in the end, he did fight. And Srila Prabhupada said, that was his victory. So So these, yeah, Prabhupada said it's natural. It's natural. And the fact that one feels lamentation is not, does not disqualify him as a pure devotee or as a great devotee. Because Arjuna did his duty. He followed the order of Krishna. And that was his victory. Srila Prabhupada told me, of course, our problem is that we identify with the body and we lament for the body. But there is spiritual lamentation. Once Srila Prabhupada said to me, our only lamentation is why people are not taken to Krishna consciousness. I believe he was paraphrasing Prahlad Maharaj, that for myself I have no anxiety or I have no lamentation, na soche, but I'm concerned for the fallen souls who are suffering without Krishna consciousness. Some months ago I was just reading some of Srila Prabhupada's letters, not to me, just collected letters, and he was discussing some disciples of his who had left him. And I guess a common friend of theirs had written to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said that he was, you know, lamenting with tears in his eyes for these disciples, for the disciples who had left him. And he quoted one incident where his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, had given sannyas to one disciple. And very soon thereafter, the man's wife came and took him away. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur lamented, Prabhupada said, with tears in his eyes, that I could not save this soul. And so with these early devotees who left, Prabhupada said that he was like crying with tears in his eyes and silently prayed that they may come back. Which I think is just, it's the same idea, lamenting that people are not taken to Krishna consciousness, but in a very personal way, very, you know, in relation to some devotees who had come forward in the very early days of ISKCON to help him. So this is also in Krishna consciousness. It is Krishna as at the center. I saw other times Prabhupada would cry, just seeing the suffering of people. So this is compassion, Vaishnava compassion. It's not mundane lamentation. So that a devotee has the full range of emotions. The only difference between material emotion and spiritual emotion is that in spiritual emotions, Krishna is the center. And in material emotions, the body is the center. So you shouldn't think that if someone shows anger or lamentation, it necessarily means that they're in Maya. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na sochatina kanasitsiva, No. Pure devotee has all the full range of human sentiments, but the center is Krishna. And ultimately Krishna is a person. He also has the full range of sentiments. He becomes angry. He also kills demons. In fact, in his incarnation as Nrisimhadev, is like the incarnation of anger. And he also laments, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he laments for the fallen souls. And in Krishna Leela, he laments. He also feels separation from his devotees. Ramchandra too, when Sita was kidnapped by Ravana, he lamented. It wasn't material, it was a type of transcendental ecstasy. But still, it took the form of lamentation. So, Srila Prabhupada explained all these things. He exemplified them. And so we should learn from his instructions and his example. But to really come to that stage of realization, one must chant and hear offenselessly, then that, because we are, as I mentioned, part and parcel of Krishna. We have all the good qualities of Krishna, but they're covered. So the chanting reveals them, uncovers the pure soul, Chaito Dharmino Marjanam. And that's the Hare Krishna movement. So basically the Hare Krishna movement. We chant the holy name and serve Srila Prabhupada, serve the pure devotees, the whole line of disciplic succession. Chanted here about Krishna. So now I would like to request His Grace Srivinda Sarup Prabhu to or you could speak on the holy name or anything that strikes you.
As Ms. Maharaj mentioned, and I both been together, up in Montgomery, and very much involved with intense chanting of the holy names. 3 days we were doing 64 rounds, and the Lord Chaitanya says that the Lord has put all His potencies, Sarva Shakti, into these names. But sometimes we're chanting and people complain, I chant and nothing happens. I chant, I don't notice any change, I don't feel any effect. And so this was actually brought up to Prabhupada a number of times. And Prabhupada points out that there's a process. There's a discipline to chanting, because the holy name is none different from Krishna. So that means actually when we, if that's true, when we say the name Krishna, we actually ought to see Krishna right in front of us. And if we see Krishna, our hair will stand on end and tears will flow from our eyes, and start shaking and say, ga-ga-ga-ga-ga, you know, again, voice will choke up. This doesn't happen. So why not? There's a verse that's in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's often quoted. Nama Chintamani, Chintamani is Krishna, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. The name Krishna is, first of all, Chintamani. that is full of all spiritual opulences, let's say. Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. It is the form of all spiritual rasas. It is Shuddha, pure, Purna, complete, Nitya Mukta, eternally transcended, liberated, not on the material platform. Why is that? Abhinatva, nama namana, on account of, because there is no abhina, no difference between the name and that which is named. So this is what the name of Krishna is. We chant, we don't have any perception of that. Why not? Well, the very next verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu answers that question. Atta, atta means therefore, because, you know. Atasi Krishna namadi namavegrayam indriyai. Because Krishna's name, namadi, means name, form, qualities, lila, all these things. Atasi Krishna namadi namavegrayam indriyai cannot be perceived or grasped by our senses. The Prabhupada says materially contaminated senses. That's why we're saying Krishna's name, thinking about his form, pastimes, nothing is happening because we're not really perceiving them. So in a way, from this line, we can understand Mayavad philosophy. Suppose somehow by some discipline or effort, I raise myself up to the borderline of the material energy and I look over into transcendence, but with still with my materially contaminated senses, I won't see anything. Maybe I'll get told there's something big out there, big and bright, but I can't see any name, I can't see any form, I can't see any qualities, I can't see any pastimes. Nothing there. In other words, what they see nothing, and they think is nothing there. They don't realize when they see nothing, it's actually a report of their own incapacity, their own blindness. You're not qualified to see past this border. So, Atasi Krishna Namadi Nabhavidrayam India. But then there's next line, Sevan Mukehi Jivado Swayam Evas Pracha. But however, when those senses, those very same senses, are turned to the service of Krishna, engaged in the service of Krishna, then those things, name, form, they become manifest. So, actually, our senses originally are meant for perceiving Krishna, hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna, seeing Krishna directly. That's why we have senses. The jiva, in its own spiritual condition, is blessed with senses, or the powers of senses. When we come to the material world, those senses become manifest materially. And because we want to use them for something else. Their original purpose is for Krishna. But now we put them to another purpose called sense gratification. That disables them spiritually. When our senses are engaged in being the enjoyer or Krishna's competitor, In sense gratification, then Krishna disappears from view. We don't want to see him. We don't want to get, actually. Really, at the basis is we're turning away. Krishna Bahir Mukhya says, you turn your face to the outside. So Krishna has disappeared. Now, bhakti yoga means to engage the senses. To engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses. Definition. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhaktya, Uchate. And so when we do that, the senses then become enabled. So in the material world, we become spiritually disabled. When we practice devotional service, we become enabled. So this the interesting question is that if I am not able with my material senses, I mean both Jnanindriya and Karmindriya, the senses of perception and the instruments of action, I cannot come into contact with Krishna, then how can I use those senses in Krishna's service to begin with? So, to solve this problem, Krishna makes himself accessible even to our materially contaminated senses. I once heard Prabhupada give a lecture about deity worship. He says, God is spirit. He's not matter. He's not stone or wood or metal. He's spirit. He said, but Krishna thinks you are rascals. You can't see me. You can't see spirit. All you can see is stone or wood or metal. So I will appear as stone, as wood, as metal. So even though you are not competent, you can still see me, bathe me, dress me, feed me, so on. You can engage your senses. This is why he appears this way. He said, but don't think, if you think that's stone, that's what you'll see. So you should accept that Krishna's here. This deity, it doesn't point to Krishna, it doesn't represent Krishna. There is Krishna. He's agreed to appear in this way. Just to be accessible. And so in this way we can engage our senses, and then by worshipping the deity and serving the deity, our senses become purified. And then we also experience that Krishna and Krishna's statue are the same. Just as Krishna and Krishna's name are the same. But Prabhupada says that one talk, he said, you'll be surprised to hear that spiritual life begins with the tongue. I once was giving a talk at a Catholic school, and there were all these nuns there, these Catholic sisters, who were, you know, renounced and engaged in intense religious life. And I said the tongue is the most difficult sense to control, and spiritual life begins with controlling the tongue. They all started laughing. They knew exactly what I was talking about. So it's a widely known truth. Now the tongue is interesting because it is both Jnanindriya and a Karmindriya. As a Jnanindriya, it tastes. As a Karmindriya, it speaks. So that one has two functions. So both of them. So therefore we recommend these two things. For eating, Krishna Prasad. And for speaking, the holy name. So the practice of Krishna coming for the tongue is just, he is the Namavatar. He descends in the form of his name. That spiritual name is none different from Krishna. So in the beginning, we will not experience what is there. But we will become purified simply by saying the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Here is Krishna in this very convenient, portable, easy to use form. It's right in your mouth. You can carry him with him. You don't need an iPod or an iTouch or an iShuffle. This is like really small and comes right with you. You can have him all the time. And you can chant anytime, any place, anywhere. So he's accessible this way. But Prabhupada said you have to follow the process. In the beginning, we say to anybody, come on and join. We go out on Harinam and the drunks come out of the bars and start laughing and chanting Hare Krishna. We don't discourage them. We don't say, hey, you're drunk, sober up and then come back. You chant Hare Krishna. We're happy to see them. But then he says, in the beginning anyone can chant, but then he says, if one wants to progress, one has to avoid committing offenses on the grounds of spiritual understanding. So the progression is there. There's some initial purification right in the beginning, but then we want to continue, then there's a process to follow. If we don't follow the process, Prabhupada compared this to cooking with smoke. One time in Hawaii, there was a yoga teacher with some students, and he and his students all joined the Hare Krishna movement, and they got into Krishna consciousness, and they were especially having kirtan. They were cultivated musical instruments and chanting and singing, and they would have kirtan all day long. The other things they didn't like so much. They thought these no intoxication, no illicit sex. No, we should be spontaneous. We should be free. We shouldn't have so many restrictions. Well, they joined ISKCON, and then that little tension built up, and they left again. And so they were in Hawaii. And so a controversy developed because of their criticism of this method of that ISKCON is too hard or too rigid, and devotees are too uptight, as we used to say in those days. You should be free and spontaneous. So this came up to Srila Prabhupada. And he said, no, you have to follow, there's a process. And if you don't follow the process, this is when he compared this to cooking with smoke. That, I guess the idea is you're outdoors and you're cooking your breakfast outdoors, you make a fire. So if you cook with smoke, that is to say you have wet fuel, your wood is wet. You put on the fire and you get a lot of smoke. So you try to cook your breakfast with smoke. He said, first of all, you have to wait a long time for your meal. And while you're waiting, you're having a lot of trouble. Because your eyes are irritated and crying, and you're coughing and soot's falling on your skin and clothes, and it's not nice. And so he said, best you have a hot fire. And then Prabhupada acknowledged, yes, you can argue, where there's smoke, there's fire. And he says, certainly there's some little bit of fire there, but what good would that little bit of fire do you? You can go on cooking with smoke for 300 years. So this is the process. So I just want to say in a little phrase what the process is. The process is that we have to chant the holy name while trying to give up offenses. It's understood that in the beginning that there will be some offenses. If we are not seeing Krishna face to face, it's because of offenses only. And so we have to clear up these offenses. So we have to try to give up the offenses. So that's why in our temples we recite these offenses Sometimes every temple, everybody does it together. Every morning we learn the 10 offenses against the holy name. And Maharaj was speaking about the first one, sadhu ninda, unnecessarily blaspheming or finding fault with devotees who are the servant of the holy name. This is sadhu ninda. It's an offense, guru avajna, to disregard the spiritual master. Well, he has good ideas or good advice, but we have to take the spiritual master seriously as the person that God has sent to give us direction. Can't think of just an ordinary person. If somebody, I have to accept him as God's representative and take him seriously. So then we know that we have to give up according to his order. We have to follow some regulative principles. So in this way, if you just see what the offenses are, you can see every includes a multitude of sins too. So we have to chant the holy name while trying to become free from offenses. So Prabhupada talked about three stages of chanting: offensive, clearing, and pure. And he said that in the pure stage, what's manifested is Shuddhanam, the pure name. That's when you see Krishna and his name are the same. The name is revealed to us. There's the beginning, there may be the offensive stage or the offensive platform. What's revealed then is nam aparad. Nam aparad is there is I'm committing offenses and also I don't care. I don't do anything about it. I don't take any remedial or corrective measures. If a person becomes very unfortunate in their career in Krishna consciousness, they think, for example, that sadhu ninda is their service to God. Those people are in a very unfortunate position when an offense against the holy name is your service. So one has to be careful to avoid these offenses. If we are not trying to clear them up, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something that's really horrifying to think about. He says, then the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is not much better than letters of the alphabet. So that's cooking with smoke. The clearing stage is not pure, but I'm at least trying to get free from these offenses. I'm working at it. Then what's manifest is not the pure name, but at least the dawning light of the name. This is called Nam Abhasa. In Sanskrit, Abhasa means the projection of light into darkness. We're sitting in the room in the morning. We cannot see the sun, but the sunlight's coming into the window. That's abhasa. Or we see the reflection of light on water. That's abhasa. Or I can even see in the floor the altar lights. That's abhasa. It's a light projected from its source. So this is namabhasa. And Namacharya Haridas Thakur compares this to dawning light. When the sun is below the horizon, but the dawning light is in the sky. And he says this in the morning, the forest becomes safe when the dawning light is there. The wild animals go back and the Bhutas and pretas and ghosts and hobgoblins, they disappear, and the robbers and thieves and dacoits and highwaymen, they go away. So the forest becomes safe. He says, just this nam abhasa, just by chanting while trying to give up offenses, just this nam abhasa that's available, he says, that destroys all sinful reactions, and the result is mukti, liberation. The pure name gives prema, which is higher. This is the teaching, and we find out that if for example, I've been chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, and I've been committing, I'm in a hurry, and so I want to chant the holy name and also watch the morning news at the same time. This is inattentiveness while chanting. So I'm committing a whole bunch of offenses against the holy name of various kind. Then there'll not be much effect. What's going on? Why isn't this working? What's wrong with the Hare Krishna movement? What's wrong with the gurus? There's no pure devotees here. Maybe they're over there. I'm not making any progress. I can't figure out. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I look at the Bhagavad Gita. Why does Prabhupada keep saying the same thing over and again? Every page is just like the next page. If I start to chant on the clearing stage, now I'm going to try to be attentive when I chant the holy name. I'll be very careful about devotees, even though I see a devotee is doing something wrong. Okay, he's done something wrong, but he at least understands the goal is Krishna consciousness and wants it. That great good quality makes everything else not so important, and so on. I start to try to become free from these offenses. I check myself, and I go from the offensive stage to the clearing stage, which actually can be done in a minute. I mean, you cannot go right now. Well, you can, but it's really rough to go to the pure stage. But that it takes time for things to go away. But we can in 1 minute go, and I'll tell you how, but go from the offensive to the clearing stage. Well, as soon as we make that change, everything else looks different. We open Prabhupada's book and we say, wow, look at that. And we find out, it's like he's telling me just what I need to know. And it all becomes very, very interesting. And the devotees all look better. And ISKCON looks nice. And there's a whole other world that happens. Because there's hope. Because in the offensive stage, whatever spiritual progress I'm making is imperceptible. But when I start to be on the clearing stage, I can feel myself making spiritual progress. And I say, oh, I can see a path out. The hope comes. So how to do it right away? Well, the simplest place, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, tells us that the offense called inattentiveness, well, pramadaha, and attentiveness while chanting. He says, this offense is the offense from which all other offenses grow. And you can see why. He says that because pramadaha means craziness, literally. But another way of saying a person is crazy in English is he's distracted. Like a crazy person, you know, sees other things nobody else sees, and his mind is always somewhere else. And you know, this pramadaha means not paying attention to Krishna. Well, that's our whole problem, right? We're distracted from Krishna. So, in a way, it's a sort of root condition, and all the other offenses are different ways of pramadaha. But when we, especially when we have japa, see, that's the time to work on that offense, because japa makes everything really simple. Life is complicated. People are going on. You get distracted by all kinds of different people. You're dealing with different situations. There are pressures. But when you sit down to chant japa, the whole arena or stage of your life becomes simple. And there's just really three entities there. There's me. There's the holy name. And there's my mind. Those are the three actors on stage. And it's very simple. I fix my mind on the holy name, paying attention. I start to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And then about three or four, five, six mantras in, suddenly I'm worrying about the water bill. You know, so how did my mind go from the Maha Mantra to the water bill? I don't know. I can't tell. It's like trying to figure out when did I fall asleep? Yeah. But it's gone. As soon as I notice it's gone, I bring it back. So if I just do that, it may go away every three mantras. Whenever it goes away, I bring it back. That's the clearing stage. So here, the offensive stage, my mind goes off. I once had a professor with my, when I was becoming a devotee, I was still a graduate student. And so I brought one of my professors to the temple. I was living at the temple at the time. And we were having a Sunday feast kirtan, and I see him stand in the kirtan and start to chant and clap and everything. And I thought, my God, he's going to be a devotee. So afterwards, I said to him, you know, Dr. Burke, how'd you like the chanting? He says, oh, it was great. I got so many good ideas. So I know that you can sit and chant and suddenly you think of one thing and then you think of another thing and then you think of another thing and you get so many good ideas and you start solving this problem and so on. Yeah. So that's offensive. So you can be on it. So, but all we have to do is when our mind goes away from whatever place it wanders, we bring it back. Just like Krishna says in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, wherever the mind wanders, bring it back under control of the self. So as soon as we're making that effort, then we're on the clearing stage. And if we haven't been doing like that, if we start doing it, immediately see a difference. And then we can also start dealing with other offenses. We'll be able. But if we don't take care of this, we will have trouble dealing with the others. So this is a very simple thing, how one can immediately go from the offensive to the clearing platform. And then we are showing Krishna that we are interested, actually. Because you can think, why is it an offense to be inattentive? What's exactly offensive about it? Well, say you've invited some important person to your home, your spiritual master or the head of your corporation where you work, or they've agreed to come and visit you at a certain time. They show up at the front door. They knock. There's no answer. They open the door. Hello, hello. Anybody home? Yeah, I'm back here. Just a minute. I just got to finish putting away the laundry. You know, I mean, and then you wander out a little while later. I mean, that's rude. There's a very important person that's coming, and you're like, what? This person's going to be what? Offended. So we're calling Krishna. We're asking him to come into our hearts. And we're somewhere else when he shows up. So we just have to give him this courtesy of our attention to show him we're expecting him and waiting for him. And then he pays attention to us. And this is what happens. So that's our simple process of Krishna consciousness. That we can follow this process of chanting and trying to give up offenses. And it becomes easier and easier as we go along. If we've had bad habits, those bad habits, you know, it takes a while to change bad habits, but they become good habits. So Prabhupada has given us this process. It has unimaginable potencies. It's actually amazing that we have this opportunity. You do not get an opportunity like this very often in the material world. There were times where all the mantras of the brahmanas were secret, and then qualified people couldn't hear them, and so on. Now they're all unqualified, and it's been broadcast all over the world. So we should take advantage of this process. Prabhupada said, let me just conclude. He said, I've given you everything. So we should know that. First of all, I have to say this about Prabhupada, that he really understood and took to heart the orders of his spiritual master. As it's very interesting what Prabhupada said. He said, "What position is if he knows the truth but doesn't act?"
Yeah.
Right. See, it was incomprehensible to Prabhupada that you could actually know the truth and not act. And so, the order that was given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to Prabhupada to preach in English means to go to the West. He gave it to all his leaders. It was a widely distributed order. It wasn't exclusive to Prabhupada. In fact, Prabhupada thought it was really amazing when he got the order, because he wasn't a sannyasi, he wasn't a brahmachari, he was a householder doing work, supporting his family, and Bhaktisiddhanta tells him to preach in English, and then go to the West. Nothing happened. Prabhupada got this order in 1936. The clock's ticking, 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 ticking. Where did they come? And really, what Bhaktisiddhanta would have wanted, and what Srila Prabhupada wanted, was not that one person came with no resources and no help, but that 5, 6, 10, 15 people came. It didn't happen. He came. Because he understood. He actually had knowledge. And so he showed up. So there's really something quite special from Srila Prabhupada. That Prabhupada was very generous about his god brothers. He was very disappointed in what happened, but he told us once, he says, all my god brothers are going back to Godhead. So the if there's any issue, the issue is not whether somebody is liberated or saved or not. The issue is really where does the knowledge and the qualification come to take the Krishna consciousness movement further, to develop it, to spread it, to give it to others, to show compassion, to cry for the fate of other human beings. It's extraordinary to me that when Prabhupada got the order in 1936, this was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sitting in India in 1936, and he thinks the people in the West are the ones that are suffering. India wasn't free, it was poverty stricken, and yet, you know, in England they're suffering. Should have some feeling for suffering humanity. So Prabhupada is in this regard, at least to my mind, very, very special. And he is the one that has his, when we have received the instructions for Krishna consciousness from him, there's something really special about that because it's delivered by somebody with really very special realized knowledge, not just to go back to Godhead, but to bring many, many others with him. That's Prabhupada's special mercy. And he's told us how to do it. He once wrote, "You should become just like me." When I saw that the first time, when he had said that to Shyama Sundar, he said, "I am one person, see it, what I have done. Now we are 500, all of you become just like me." I thought, that's really Prabhupada's order. And I thought, how can I become like him? But then I realized the spiritual master will not give an order unless he also makes it possible for it to happen. So I know it is, I like to say, not impossible for us. If we just, sometimes we're given something and it takes us a while to realize what we have and to develop it. But we should have no doubt that it has been given and is Prabhupada's expectation that we will carry on in the way that he has. Okay, thank you.
That there are people who dress as sadhus or present themselves as sadhus, and they come to ISKCON temples and undermine the faith of the devotees in their spiritual authorities and try to take people away. So how do we deal with it? Of course, I can't... this is sort of a practical question. But the closest experience I have is in Los Angeles. There's a saying, good fences make good neighbors. So in Los Angeles, they just made a very strict policy not to allow those people or people associated with those people from coming to the temple community, not just the temple itself, but the whole community. And the result was that the atmosphere improved. The atmosphere in the temple became more peaceful, and the relations with those other devotees was better because they weren't they weren't threatening us, you know. So it seems like a good policy. I mean, we can't preach to them because they think they know the truth better than we. They know a higher truth than we know. And they're on a mission. They're on a mission, and they think the end justifies the means. So they use all sorts of tactics in pursuance of their mission. And it really seems appropriate they have good fences to make good neighbors. Srila Prabhupada had a godbrother in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was discussing with the godbrother how there's so many sahajiyas in Vrindavan, like 75% of Vrindavan is sahajiya. And so the godbrother asked Prabhupada, well, what are you going to do to protect your disciples? And Srila Prabhupada said that I build a fence around them to protect them. So during Prabhupada's time, there was quite a strong fence, and that fence continued. But over the years, the fence has been eroded, like a lot of holes in the fence, and people are associating with Vaishnavas. You know, we won't question whether they're Vaishnavas or not, for the sake of the discussion. They're associating with people that Srila Prabhupada warned us not to associate with. And the results have been quite disturbing. So, anyway, that's the situation. It's hard. It depends on faith, really. It's all a matter of faith. You know, we can tell someone not to go, Prabhupada discouraged it. But if they have faith in you, they will go. If they don't have faith, or, you know, they don't have faith, they go, you know, what's wrong? Well, they'll go. Sort of like the certain type of child, like if you tell them not to do it, they want to do it more. So it could be like that, and say, you know, don't grow it. Why not? What are you afraid of? Why shouldn't I grow? So we can't, we can advise people not to grow, but we can't control it. It depends on their faith, their desire. But what we can control is who enters the gate to our community. And I think it's the duty of the leaders to protect the devotees, safeguard the faith of the devotees. Can take different forms in different places, in different situations. I gave an example in LA, there could be other approaches. Yes?
So I have a doubt that in general Mahamudra is given by the spiritual master to the disciples in the form of silent or just ears sometimes they use, and other way in Krishna Mahamudra we are using as a Sankirtan. So how we can justify Sankirtan as well as the Mahamudra as a species?
The Hare Krishna Mahamudra mantra is not a secret mantra. And, we distribute it freely. Once you receive it, you can chant it quietly as japa or loudly in kirtan. But the mantra itself is open. It's not like the mantras that the spiritual master gives to the disciple, when the disciple is initiated as a Brahmin, it's not like that. Anyone can chant it. And you can chant it either as japa or kirtana, or both. Ideally, we do both.
You know, the Shastra says that the Yuga Dharma is chanting in the names of God, specifically Sankirtan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Yuga Avatar to give that Dharma. So you know, this is the way he did it, as Maharaj just described. I mean, he's the Acharya, he's the teacher. He came, although he's Krishna himself, he came as a devotee to teach by practice. So how he practices is standard. So this is part of the extraordinary mercy of Kali Yuga, that sometimes there are very potent mantras that are kept either secret or very restricted, as it was a traditional, but now because of Kali Yuga, there's a special potency that these very potent masters are given out very freely. That's mercy of the age. I'm not really qualified to judge in this way myself. It's that you know, when you get some medicine from a doctor, there's a bottle that says 2 tablets 3 times a day, and somehow they know what's the right thing, and you start taking, well, I'll just take them all 3 or 1 in the morning, and something, you know, you might run into some problems. So there are just different prescriptions for different mantras by the people who are on a much higher level than me. And that make these kinds of decisions. You want to add something to that?
Yeah, I mean, from the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the initiation process was divided in two. First, Harinam, and then say Gayatri and other mantras. And the idea is that to be initiated as a Brahmin or Dvija, one should be of a certain standard. So, as Srila Prabhupada said, to give Harinam initiation for encouragement. And then by the chanting of the holy name, the candidates become purified, and when he's purified to a certain extent, then he's considered to be eligible for the second initiation. But even for the first initiation, there is a standard. One must be. And it's based on Shastra, you know, Sadhu Shastra Guru, these are the authorities. But Shastra is the central point. And the Sadhu is one who lives according to Shastra. The Guru lives according to Shastra, but repeats the same message as the Shastra. So, Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There should be a mutual testing period between the guru and the disciple. And during Srila Prabhupada's presence, the minimum period was 6 months. Now, as time has progressed, I think the minimum period is at least a year. And the mutual testing period is required so that the disciple can be assured of the position of the guru, and the guru can be assured of the position of the disciple. You know, in Srila Prabhupada's case, he couldn't personally know every candidate, and therefore the temple president was appointed as his representative to assess the candidates. So he would test the candidate, and after 6 months or a year or whenever the president felt he could recommend the person, he would recommend the person. And following the four regulated principles, you know what they are, chanting 16 rounds, for that period of 6 months, the candidate should be chanting for 16 rounds. He should show that he's steady in chanting 16 rounds and following the four principles, so that at the time of initiation, when he takes his vows, we have a reasonable hope that he'll maintain, because he's already been doing it for 6 months or a year or whatever. So even the first initiation, even though it's for encouragement, but still there's a standard that Srila Prabhupada established based on certain scriptural injunctions, including that idea that there should be a mutual testing period.